This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, and welcome to it, my friends. It is Monday on the Steve Gruber Show. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to get out and enjoy it. I got to be honest, I feel that summer is slipping away quickly, so I made some last-minute adjustments and decisions and decided, well, maybe it was time to enjoy just a little bit more of pure Michigan. And wheeled it back north to our Northern Michigan studios in Boyne City because, you know what, Labor Day is almost here. It's hard for me to believe. It's been a terrific summer. And it's hard for me to believe that it's racing away so fast. Now, having said that, I've noticed in the forecast here a day or two ago that finally a heat wave, a real honest to goodness heat wave coming to Michigan. I mean, how long has it been? When was the last time we had an actual, heat wave, a stifling? Couldn't stand to go outside, didn't want to move, didn't want to be in the sun, stifling heat wave. I can't remember the last one. I do remember as a kid, back before everybody had air conditioning, we'd see several days each summer where it'd be 95 degrees and 95 humidity. Overnight temperatures would be in the 70s. It would happen all the time. We'd wake up soaking wet. I mean, if you were lucky, you had some cheap box fan, but you'd crack the window and hope the mosquitoes didn't eat you alive and little cracks in the screen. That's the way I grew up. And now these days we're told about global warming, that it's making it hotter than it's ever been. But I'm sorry, how old are you? You remember those smoking hot summers? You must, the 70s and 80s. We haven't seen a heat wave in a very long time. Well, that could change here in a couple of days. And I don't know if it's a heat wave or a couple of days that might just reach 90. In respect of the strongest El Nino in years, we get some heat. Forecasters say that by the end of the week, we could all be baking in the 90s for a few days anyhow. It makes me think of childhood friends and the dreams we had. Yeah, that's a stolen line. You got it. For the worshippers of green theology on the left, they will point to the thermometer and scream, "See, it's global warming." For the rest of us, we'll probably just yawn and say, "Look, it's a thing we like to call summer around here." But in respect of summer, President Obama will be traveling to Alaska to declare, in the name of global warming, that we are renaming America's highest mountain, Mount McKinley. Mount McKinley will be renamed here on a trip. Has the president even been to Alaska ever? I don't know if he has or hasn't. But Ohio lawmakers not impressed. McKinley, the 25th president of the United States. Mount McKinley has held that name for over 100 years. McKinley murdered in office. And Congressman Bob Gibbs said in a statement, "This landmark is a testament to his countless years of service to our country." And described Obama's action as constitutional overreach, saying that an act of Congress was required to rename the mountain because a new law, formally naming it after McKinley, was passed in 1917. This political stunt is insulting to all Ohio residents and I will be working with the House Committee on Natural Resources to determine what can be done to prevent this action. He wants to name it Denali, of course, which is the Athabascan word for the high one. Maybe that could refer to, you know, you got it. The high one. Senator Rob Portman of Ohio also blasted the decision as yet another example of the president going around Congress. While House Speaker John Boehner said the naming of the mountain after McKinley was a testament to the 25th president's great legacy, deeply disappointed in the decision, he said. The state of Alaska has had a standing request to change the name to Denali, dating back to 1975, when the legislature passed a resolution and then Governor Jay Hammond appealed to the federal government. But those efforts and legislation in Congress have been stymied by members of Ohio's congressional delegation. Even when Mount McKinley National Park was renamed Denali National Park in 1980, the federal government retained Mount McKinley as the same name of the actual peak that rises 20,320 feet. In fact, I'll tell you something. Here's a little something for you. Might win you a beer along the way. Mount McKinley is the highest mountain in the world from base to summit. It's the highest vertical in the world, but I bet you didn't know that. It's not the tallest overall, but from the base to the summit, it's the biggest hill on the planet. Mount McKinley is. Back in 1896, a prospector in the mountains of Central Alaska named the range after William McKinley upon learning that he had been nominated as a candidate for United States president. McKinley killed an office shot 6 months into his second term, making way for Teddy Roosevelt to become president. Meanwhile, Senator Lisa Murkowski, also a Republican who had pushed legislation for years to change the name, said Alaskans were honored to recognize the mountain as Denali. Of course, she's been a bit of a rebel for a long time. I'd like to thank the president for working with us to achieve this significant change to show respect and honor and gratitude to the Athabascan people of Alaska, Murkowski said in a video message recorded atop the mountain's Ruth Glacier, with cloudy snow-capped peaks behind her. Obama will not personally visit the mountain during his stay in Alaska, which runs through Wednesday. He'll spend most of his trip in Anchorage, south of the peak, where he will attend a State Department-sponsored meeting on climate change. Of course, climate change. Climate change. Ah, yes. The conference will bring together foreign ministers of Arctic nations and key non-Arctic states with scientists, policymakers, and stakeholders. So you see, it really doesn't have anything to do with honoring the Athabascan people. It has to do with politics and making a statement during a global warming get-together. We'll just change a mountain to make me feel good for the weekend. Well, you'll have that. It is 14 after the hour on this Monday. Welcome to it, my friends. So much to cover this day. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. You can get a hold of us at 888-900-9966. It's the Steve Gruber Show, and I'll be right back.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Hey, welcome to it. So here we are back watching something happen in Michigan that we're a little too familiar with. We're back on the crosshairs. Michigan motorists, all too familiar with the very frightening and very real idea that someone is randomly shooting at them along the freeway system. It's happened before, and now the Michigan State Police and several other agencies believe it is happening again. I'm sure you've heard this, but if not, according to several law enforcement agencies, including the Calhoun County Sheriff's Department, there have been at least 5 shooting incidents along Michigan interstates, I-94 and I-69, since late July. None of the victims have been injured, and there does not seem to be any relationship, any connection whatsoever between the drivers, and no pattern so far. Calhoun County Sheriff Matt Saxton says the drivers of the vehicles have nothing in common. The direction they're traveling, damage to the vehicle is different. There's just no pattern, he says. Now, this is not the first time Michigan motorists have been terrorized by a random highway shooter. In the fall of 2012, I'm sure you'll remember, Raleigh Castile of Wixom was taking shots at people driving along I-96 between Detroit and Lansing. One driver was hit in the rear end. Luckily, he didn't get killed by one of Castile's bullets. Like I said, fortunately, no one was killed in that deal. Castile, by the way, convicted of his shooting spree and sent to prison in January of 2014. He very well should spend could spend the rest of his life there. But these incidents are around Coldwater and Marshall. Jonesville Road in Branch County, one of the places at M60 and Jonesville Road in Branch County in southern Michigan. In addition, police are now patrolling the secondary roads, too, running up to and along each stretch of the highway more often since the reports. No suspects, no arrests. And in addition, there's still no evidence that to suggest directly that the shooter or shooters is targeting people inside of their vehicles. The drivers of the vehicles have nothing in common. While police have uncovered a majority of the incidents since releasing an initial press release on August the 19th, they have also attributed additional reports to flying rocks and other highway hazards. Now, any motorist, you are, stay in your vehicle. You know, get out of harm's way and then call 911. That's the pretty simple approach. You know, continue the next off-ramp. There is no restriction on traffic flow on 94 or 69 either. And now the Calhoun County Major Crimes Task Force, which includes officers from the State Police, Battle Creek Police Department, Calhoun County Sheriff's Office, and multiple other agencies is involved in the case. You can also call Crime Stoppers or the Silent Observer if you have any information. Isn't that just weird? What would possess somebody to sit there and take pot shots at vehicles moving along the interstate? To me, it's just bizarre. But be aware if you're traveling that part of the state. And, you know, I'd say be careful, but what could you possibly do to alter what you normally do? It's completely random. And so, be aware, I suppose. Being careful. I don't know what to tell you to do anything differently to make yourself more safe. I wouldn't know what to recommend. Back to politics. Hillary in trouble now. The latest Des Moines Register poll. Hillary's at 37%. Bernie, feeling the burn. Sanders is at 30. She has just a 7-point lead. Just a 7-point lead in Iowa now. Sanders already in the last two polls leading in New Hampshire, as you probably heard. And yet, you'll hear the Democratic establishment continue to tell you, oh, there's no problem here. Don't worry, we've got this time. Well, I wouldn't be all too sure about that. And now the Democratic National Committee is dead wrong, says Bernie Sanders, by limiting the number of debates available to presidential candidates. I think that's dead wrong, and I have let the leadership of the Democrats know that. Sanders making those comments on CNN's State of the Union program yesterday. I think this country benefits, all people benefit, democracy benefits when we have debates, and I want to see more of them. I think the debates are a good thing. Sanders said that in addition to officially sanctioned debates from the Democratic Party, candidates running for the White House should also be forced to debate environmental issues before a panel of environmentalists, as well as issues specifically important to young voters and to working people. Yeah, we must be forced to debate my agenda, said Sanders. What a joke. Sanders' comments come after critical words from former Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland, who on Friday accused the Democratic National Committee of creating a rigged process accusing, in effect, Debbie Wasserman Schultz of protecting Hillary from the boys. I think it's a big mistake for us as a party to circle the wagons around the inevitable frontrunner, O'Malley said. I agree with him. What are you going to do when her whole candidacy implodes in October or January or pick a date? You know, when the secret soldiers of Benghazi, 13 hours, the secret soldiers of Benghazi comes out as a blockbuster movie in January, how's that going to help her? And I'm going to tell you, it's not going to help her one little bit. The point is, you need a lot of debates and a lot of discussion. You can vet people. Didn't happen the last time around. We ended up with Barack Obama. And now they're avoiding it again. At any rate, it is Monday. Welcome to it. They'll have debates, but just not very many, and not until at least October. You can join us here on the conversation, 888-900-9966. It's the Steve Gruber Show. We're rolling.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
It's the Steve Gruber Show. Thanks for stopping in. It's Monday, my friends. You're just getting out of bed. Well, welcome to it. We've been working for a while, but you come on in, get yourself some coffee, settle in. If you're already working, well, God bless you for that, because hard work is what it takes around here. So, in Texas, you know, I've just caught a glimpse of this, the pictures at this Chevron station, where this deputy gunned down for, I can't figure out any particular reason, gunned down for no, you know, just murdered in cold blood, dying at the scene. And now this other guy has been charged with the murder. Just walked up to me. The guy's pumping gas and murdered him. We'll start with that today with our good friend, the Professor Alan Sachs, Professor of Political Science at the University of Texas. Professor, welcome to it as always.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
What was this about?
Well, the authorities in Harris County, Texas, which embraces Houston. For those people that don't know the name, Harris County, Texas, it's the city of Houston, really, is the main city in Harris County. But the authorities down there say, and I think it's ridiculous, but I know they don't want to jump to any conclusions, they say they don't know the motive. Well, I don't know. A lot of people might be able to come up with a motive pretty quickly in regard to what happened to that sheriff's deputy who was in uniform. And the two individuals, the person that is the alleged killer and the deputy sheriff, apparently had no prior incidents with each other whatsoever. And yet the authorities down there say they don't have a motive. And the killer, the alleged killer, is not talking to the authorities. So people can make up their own minds, and a lot of people have already made up their minds on what it looks like.
What does it look like? What do you think people, what are people saying? Let's just get right to it.
Well, what some people are saying is that there's this organization called Black Lives Matter. And I'm not sure if that's the organization that did this, but there's been some call on the part of some inflammatory individuals who are saying, go after police officers, go after police officers.
And it's happening.
Apparently, that's what it might be. I don't know if Black Lives Matter has a direct link to that or not, but they've inflamed the situation in a lot of other parts of the nation. But also, I believe some quote in quotes leaders have said that it's fair game to go after police officers, and various police departments and police spokesmen have responded to that. So it's a this is the stuff that's gone on in some of the talk shows. It may not be a legitimate conversation. There may be some other motive that comes up that can be that can explain this, but almost immediately the conversations began. And also these two white reporters in Virginia, Roanoke, I believe, that were killed last week on the air. Apparently the killer, who also died at his own hands later on, sort of admitted in sort of a manifesto that he was motivated by everything from 9/11 to a lot of other incidents that have happened throughout the United States.
He wanted to start a race war.
In past years, and wanted to start a race war, correct?
Yeah. So, all right. So what do you make of all this? This guy not too far from you in Houston, will it be charged as a hate crime? Because here's the thing. You know, we have these discussions on a regular basis. If a white man had walked up and shot a black man in the back like that,
there'd be riots all over the place.
Yeah, there'd be a hate crime right there, and there'd be riots and so forth. A black man walks up to a white police officer, seemingly because he's a white police officer. I can find no other reason. I think you're probably onto something there. Okay, so will the hate crime be charged? Okay, he's not talking. I mean, this. I don't see that this has a good end, because here's the problem. Then you have a copycat, and more so to these reporters in Virginia. You know, who's the next dark soul out there who has a black heart, who's going to go out and say, okay, I can kill three on camera live, or five or ten, and do it in the name of some political, you know, mentally twisted political agenda?
What makes this political as well is that President Obama, and I'm not laying this at the feet of the president, but his whole impetus to become president, some people might remember this, going back to the Democratic National Convention of 2004, President Obama made that startling speech that really attracted everybody's attention. And it was a wonderful speech. There is not a black America. There's not a white America. There's not a red America. There's not a blue America. There's one America. And the convention and the nation was spellbound by that. And by many accounts, race relations in this country have gotten progressively worse over the past 6 or 7 years.
Well, you know, and you think about that speech in comparison to what he actually has done in office, because he has, in my estimation, in the estimation of many, racial relations are worse today than they were 6 years ago significantly. And you have to look at, you know, he weighed in on things like Trayvon Martin, Ferguson, Missouri, but ignored other important issues and events in America over the last 6 years, which creates a lot of animosity and created more animosity than I believe existed previously.
I would agree with you, and I think a lot of other people would as well. It would be wonderful if the president would speak out against something like this that happened in Harris County, regardless of whether all the facts are in or not, and said, we don't need this anymore. Our police officers are very, very important, and this kind of thing just goes way beyond the pale. And it would be nice if the president would speak out on these issues. And maybe he has, but it hasn't been loud enough.
So, okay. Where do you think we're going with this, with the whole Black Lives Matter conversation? I mean, it seems to me that many people are already fed up with it, including people in the black community. You saw the mother going off that got all the national attention on video. Of course, there was too much editing to be done with her language. We didn't get to use it here, but right, some news outlets did, saying, come on, you know, the 9-year-old girl who was killed in a random bullet, and you don't yell out for her, but you yell out for the, as she put it, the thug that killed, you know, was killed by a police officer.
Well, this issue of, and I'm not sure if I'd call it political correctness or not, but the issue of trying to get rid of just about everything that had any vestige of the old Confederacy or anything to do with the civil rights movement in a negative way. For example, at the University of Texas at Austin, they're removing a statue of Jefferson Davis that had been there for many, many, many years. As a friend of mine said, which is interesting, if we want to get rid of every vestige of segregation and slavery, we'll get rid of the Democratic Party. Because the Democratic Party in the South was connected intimately with segregation
directly
and slavery.
Now hold that thought.
Probably the 1970s or 80s.
Yeah, hold that thought. We'll be right back to talk about the Democratic Party and their process of selecting a president this time around with Professor Alan Sachs right here on the Steve Gruber Show after a quick break.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
It's Monday on the Steve Gruber Show. Sun just coming up over the big mitten. Yeah, yeah. Politically, on the landscape, Bernie Sanders now coming right up on Hillary Clinton's heels. The latest Des Moines Register poll out of Iowa showing Sanders trailing Clinton by just 7 points now. Clinton with 37%, Sanders at 30, and the upstart Joe Biden at 14. The last two polls out of New Hampshire show Sanders winning there, 42-37. So he's taking a lead in New Hampshire. He's clipping her heels in Iowa. And Joe Biden is in the side room warming up. What to make of all of that? Back again with the Professor Alan Sachs. What do you think, Professor?
Well, it's all about Hillary. And Bernie Sanders is really much more aggressive, garnering votes and crowds than I ever would have imagined, quite frankly. When he first announced, I thought, oh, forget it, it's just Bernie, because most people don't even know who he was, who he is, and that may be still true today. But in some parts of the country, they know now. And I see this in my classroom. I ask in my classroom the very first day of class, I said, and the majority of them aren't following the election. That's our young people today. They're just interested in whether or not they can get Bluebell ice cream or not again. That's another story that may not resonate with people in Michigan. But I ask, how many of you are following the election? I said, then let me just tell you, ask you questions. Who do you know? Who are you for? And by gosh, Bernie Sanders came up. He was about the only name that they knew. It was even greater than Donald Trump. So Bernie's coming on strong in Iowa, but it has to be translated into people on the ground. When we talk about Iowa, we're not talking about just a regular election. We're talking about caucuses. And the caucuses, and I don't like caucuses. They sound great on paper, but they're not very democratic with a little D. And but again, in a sarcastic way, I'm not sure if the Democratic Party is all that democratic either, with a little D. You've got to get delegates.
There.
You have to get people to go to these caucuses that only last for a small period of time on one night. And I believe the Iowa caucus is February the 1st, if I'm not mistaken. And it could be very cold that evening. And they have to go there. And that's a difficult thing to do because you've got to get your ground troops out, so to speak. It depends on organization, and you have to bus people in. So what Bernie Sanders has to do, aside from the popularity, is to do what I'm sure Hillary Clinton already has in place. You've got to get a strong field organization. And
here's the thing.
I don't know whether he said it or not.
Yeah, look at this. I want to go back just to May. At the front end of the summer, you know, Hillary Clinton's been dogged by this whole email scandal. Ed Henry has been a persistent thorn on her side from Fox News, and not because he's being obnoxious. He's asking very straightforward questions. Did you wipe your server?
Oh, he's the only one that really has been asking some very strong questions.
Okay, so in May, before this all started, her numbers in Iowa, she had a 57% support. Sanders at 16, Biden at 8. So look at how dramatically that has shifted. A 41-point lead to a 7-point lead. And Biden, meanwhile, you know, trying to decide if Valerie Jarrett has his back, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So, Valerie Jarrett, let's make no mistake, she is the one who may have... Well, she doesn't like Hillary. It's no secret. Valerie Jarrett, who is the number one advisor to President Barack Obama over these last 6.5 years, is not a fan of Hillary. And so, therefore, that could be creating problems for Hillary as well.
You know, you raise a very interesting point, is that when the history of President Obama's administration is written, who are the people that really helped to make these decisions? And Valerie Jarrett certainly comes to mind. along with a lot of other individuals as well. But how this administration operated from the inside is very fascinating. We know, even by the president's own admission, and I think he said in an interview one time, he's lazy. He admitted that he's lazy. And we see that with a lot of his vacations, with his golf games. So you have to ask the question, who really is running the show? And so I think you're really on to something. Valerie Jarrett and perhaps a few other individuals really were the presidents of the United States during the past 6, 7, or 8 years.
Now, I want to ask you about something else here that I'm reading that's crossing the wires this morning. New York Times reporter Jonathan Martin is reporting that the Democratic National Committee over the weekend could not pass a simple resolution expressing support for the president's Iran deal. Again, this is coming from the New York Times reporter Jonathan Martin. It's a bit of an embarrassment for the administration, seeing as it's how his party, he appointed W. Wasserman Schultz, and it's revived the latest round of eye-rolling among Democratic operatives about the state of the party in general.
The Iran deal is going to pass. The Democrats will go down the line for President Obama on this. It's going to pass one way or the other. Probably, if people are following this, they'll know what I mean by saying that the House and the Senate are probably going to vote it down, but then the president is going to override that vote in Congress, and he's going to veto it, rather, and then it will be impossible to override it. It gets very complicated to even describe it, but he'll get his Iran deal. At least a lot of people are saying that, but there are some embarrassing points of it, where a few prominent Democratic senators, like Bob Menendez of Florida, a Democrat, Charles Schumer of New York, a Democrat, and perhaps one or two others, but not enough, have come out against it. The Democratic Party is strong in favor. They don't want to embarrass the president. So he's going to have his votes. His veto will not be overridden. The entire Republican Party is against this Iran deal, but the president will get it one way or the other. He'll get his deal. And, of course, the Republicans are complicit in this because this is a treaty, as everybody knows, and not just a simple vote.
That's right. Professor Alan Sachs, always an education. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right. Straight ahead, we'll take a look at sports and news here on the Steve Gruber Show. Stick tight.